The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the agent for truth, Joe Bannister, your host. Happy Saturday morning to you. AgentForTruth.com and FreedomAboveFortune.com are the websites. Freedom Above Fortune radio show is coming to you courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network and also broadcasting to the Tampa, Ocala, Florida area courtesy of 104.3 FM. We hope you'll tell your friends to listen to Liberty Works Radio Network and support it. You can go to the LWRN.net website and click on the Join Donate button to help out. You will find that Liberty Works Radio Network brings you radio programming you will not hear anywhere else. Given the many blessings that God has bestowed upon our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven. So I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, our country is certainly in deep trouble, as I'm sure most of my listeners are well aware, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey his commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. Remember that Jesus said, "If you love me, keep my commandments." I invite you to join my email list by visiting my website at freedomabovefortune.com, or there are links at agentfortruth.com. You'll see a mailing list choice on the left-hand side of the home page. For those that are new to the show, I'm a former special agent with the Internal Revenue Service Criminal Investigation Division. I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service there, I performed an off-duty investigation into claims that the income tax laws did not actually require most Americans to file federal income tax returns and pay federal income tax, and that the IRS was actually deceiving the American public about their true income tax obligations. After gathering and analyzing a great deal of evidence, I concluded that these claims were largely true, and when I asked my IRS supervisors to discuss my conclusions with me, they not only refused to have any discussions with me, but they also encouraged me to resign from the agency. My IRS career came to an end rather abruptly in 1999 when I did resign from the Internal Revenue Service, and I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other liberty-related matters ever since.
Our guest for this Saturday's show is Carrie. She is an immigrant from Cuba. She immigrated from Cuba, if I'm getting the M's and the M's correctly, immigrated to the United States in 1962. And Carrie is just the name we're going to use. Neither myself nor Carrie see any reason to use her real name. The important thing about her is her story. And given that it's about Cuba, just no need to use his real name. So, Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe, so much for having me.
Well, it's my pleasure, and I do try whenever possible to get impressions from people who have come from other countries, other countries that we here in the United States might consider to be oppressive, tyrannical, and sometimes that may not be the case. There could be some propaganda that we're being fed here in the United States. So that's what I think is very instructive to us, is to hear from someone who actually lived in one of those countries. So we're talking about Cuba. And so Carrie left there in 1962. And basically, Carrie, we have about 10 minutes left in this segment, so please just launch into in your story. Just start at the beginning, please.
Okay. Well, I was born in 1953 in Havana, and I was a happy little girl and didn't know that anything was going wrong or would be going wrong or anything. I enjoyed my life. I enjoyed my school, my sister, my family, my grandma coming over. But as I grew a little bit older, I started to realize that my dad was leaving for periods of time, and I didn't understand why he was leaving. And when he would come back, he was dressed in, like, the military uniform, and I was wondering, well, what's going on with that? And still, I didn't hear any alarm at school. I didn't hear or sense any alarm at home about what was going on. I just went my way until, from one day to the next, and that was in 59, so in 59, I was, what, seven? I realized that all of a sudden I couldn't go to the corner store to buy my favorite Cuban hamburger. It's called a frita. And you know, you had the hamburger and you had shoestring French fries on top of it, and then you had the bread, and then you would eat it, and it was just so wonderful. And all of a sudden, when I go to the corner store, they're putting mung beans on my hamburger, and I'm going, what in the world is that? It was the most horrible tasting thing to me. I mean, after having French fries, you know, who wants mung bean, right? So I'm going, wow, that's really weird. And then all of a sudden, we have to line up. Right across the street, there was a grocery store, and all of our neighbors lined them this big, long line, and Mom had to get in this line and get food. And I was wondering why we had to do that when before we just went to that same store and bought whatever we wanted, or went to the poultry store, and they would kill the chicken fresh, and, you know, we picked the one we wanted, and they, you know, did whatever they did to it, and we took it home. Well, that wasn't happening anymore. And then I noticed in school that all of a sudden, that this is so vivid in my mind. I can't remember. I only had up to second grade, so it would have been either the first or second grade in school, and it was a private school. And by the way, my family was not rich, but we were able to go to this little private school, and all of a sudden the teacher says, let's all thank Castro for giving us this vaccine. And it was, you know, this vaccine inside an ice cream or an icy. And by that time, I had already become a believer. I was already a Christian at least 2 years. And I'm thinking, ain't no way I'm going to thank this guy for this. I'm thanking my God for this. You know, I'm not thanking him. He's nobody. And I'm just a little girl, and I'm already thinking this way. And several times at night, we would hear machine gun fire up and down our block. And my mom would, our house was separated from the next house, facing the house on the right, by an alley, and my dad and his friends would sit behind a 5-step stairs that went up and down to get to the back of the house where there were some apartments, and they would get on the back side of those stairs to listen to shortwave radio to see what was going on. And when this machine gun fire would start up, my mom would take me to my neighbors, and I don't know why she did that. I mean, I wasn't any safer there than I was at home, but they would take me there and keep me there, and that happened twice. And then I remember the Bay of Pigs. I didn't know that it was the Bay of Pigs until many years later. But I remember the Bay of Pigs situation. I was standing on these little stairs that went up from our porch, and then down into the street, because our house was at the bottom of a hill, so there had to be some kind of barrier, and there was a wall and the stairs. There had to be a barrier because of rain coming down, and we would flood if there was, that barrier wasn't there. And I was standing on those steps, and I remember listening to huge explosions and black smoke filling the sky. And I don't recall the sky clearing up the rest of that day. And I was in awe. I just didn't know what was happening. And another strange thing, too, I had my best friend. Her name was Ibis, and she lived like two or three doors on the other side of my house. And all of a sudden, she wasn't there anymore. I said, where is she? I'm here to play with her. I want to play with my friend. And they would just look at me very strangely and not say anything and send me back home. Well, years later again, I find out that she came here to the United States through a CIA program called the Peter Pan Project, where children were separated from their families and brought here so that they wouldn't go through all this thing. And then at school, my mom kept my sister and I at home. She didn't take us to school for a whole year, because now the children were being indoctrinated into a whole new system of how to go and work in the fields. They would be taken from school without notice to the parents and taken out there to work. And so my mom and my dad would hide my sister and me in the house. We couldn't play outside. We couldn't talk too loud. We couldn't giggle too loud. Of course, our neighbors were our friends, so that, you know, they wouldn't tell on us. But by that time, they had, you know, street watch set up in the community in the event that something unrevolutionary was happening. And that was definitely unrevolutionary. So all those things culminated in my dad and my mom and my sister and I coming here and me not being able to see my favorite grandmother ever again, and not seeing my family. I didn't go back till 1999. So it took, 20, 30 years for me to begin to comprehend the magnitude of what was happening to me, because I was just too young. And to think that that regime had its roots in something that happened in Russia, the Bolshevik Revolution there in 1917, that had, I wasn't even somebody's twinkle in the eyes. And that thing, now almost 100 years ago, affected me profoundly when I was a young girl.
It is amazing how these things are taking place, and it's not until they manifest themselves on our front porch, as you described, or, you know, in our neighborhood, that we begin to realize the ramifications and how deep the rabbit hole goes. Mm-hmm. So, we've got a little break coming up relating to this first segment, so maybe we'll stop right there, and then that way you can continue after the break. Our guest is Carrie, and she is talking about being born and raised in Cuba and some of her early experiences. Of course, from an American perspective, most Americans have heard of the Bay of Pigs and all of the turmoil that went on in Cuba in the 50s and 60s especially. And so this is a very unique opportunity to hear from someone who actually lived through that, and then also to compare her American experience as well. So this is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. And we'll be right back after these messages. We really appreciate you joining us.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things. Can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kind of scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House. You may say, do I have any evidence to support my suppositions? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was. His father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry, and now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cap and trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? Everybody, there's a communist living in the White House. Now what are we going to do about it?
I will not be taking any questions. As of 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued a full recall of all 776 billion pieces of U.S. currency in circulation. I know this must seem like a blow coming on the heels of this morning's announcement that our federal budget deficit has passed the $800 billion mark. But regrettably, these particular bills were printed with dye containing toxins that, while completely safe at this moment, will become extremely deadly Friday at exactly 12 noon. As a result, we need to act quickly. Okay, tomorrow all Americans will receive a bag like this in the mail. Do not, under any circumstances, attempt to burn or shred the money yourself. The federal government are the only ones that can destroy the money, as we are the only ones with the proper facilities to do so.
This is a massive recall.
We understand that this recall will be hard on U.S. citizens who will have no more money, but we assure you, if you work hard, you will be eventually able to earn it back.
This is in the best interest of the American people.
This dye poisoning causes your internal organs to rot from within and is really painful until you puke up your guts and die. There really is no time to think about this. Just listen to me and send in the money. Thank you.
Copperhead 1240, 1190, and 910 AM. Southern Rock, Kickin' Country, and Tennessee Talk.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Norman Rockwell didn't create the best in us. He just inspired the best. You've seen the paintings. The Thanksgiving turkey being served at Grandma's.
Can I have the number six?
The weathered farmer sending his baby-faced son off to college.
Now be sure and write.
The wise police officer sitting at the soda bar, talking a young boy out of running away from home.
Where are you going?
Norman Rockwell didn't create the best in us. He just inspired the best. Inspiration. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is Carrie. She grew up, born and raised in Cuba, and came here as a youngster to the United States of America. And we're having her on the show to describe what it was actually like in Cuba in the 50s and 60s, and then her impressions about coming to America and what she finds free or not so free in this country. So, Carrie, would like to go back a little bit and break down a little bit further that process that you described where your parents and you, your family, immigrated out of Cuba, immigrated into the United States. What challenges, difficulties they faced in order to, you know, literally leave the country and enter a new country?
Okay, well, I guess for my parents, especially for my mom, was the gradual realization that she may have to leave her mom there and leave the family. And not only that, by going into a totally different culture, language, economic system. I mean, my father's mother was already here in the United States. She had already bought property in the United States. She was already, had visited New York City. She owned property in Miami. So, at least on my dad's side of the family, and by the way, she had 12 children. At that time, 9 of them were alive. 9? Maybe more. No, more than that. Anyway, lots of kids. And I have lots of cousins. and so it wasn't hard, I think, emotionally for my dad to leave Cuba and come here because there were already, his mother was here and some of his siblings were here. But with my mom, it was not that way at all. Not at all. And so not to digress, but that gradual sense of the unknown, I'm even feeling it today with the way things are. So I kind of relate to how she was feeling. But anyway, that I think was the hardest thing for her, to leave her mom. And I got to tell you, I remember she would tell me that at dinner time sometimes she would make, you know, rice and chicken. And I would look at my grandmother's plate and I would say, can I have some of that? You know, it's like I was asking my grandmother for her food. I never remember being hungry or going hungry, but I remember doing that, and it was kind of unusual that, I guess, for me to be asking my grandmother for food when I had already had some. Maybe I was still hungry. I just didn't realize what was going on. Another thing, too, was our free exercise of religion was being totally attacked. I became a Christian, and so did my mom. In fact, she and I were the first in our entire family, both sides, of being Baptist. And that was a big no-no, huge no-no. I mean, I got baptized Catholic and all that stuff, but I remember one day this man in a Jeep would drive around the neighborhood asking the parents if it was okay to take the kids to church, and how innocent the time was, because nowadays you wouldn't let anybody even stop by or next to your kid on the street, much less ask them to go, you know, to let them go with the person somewhere that you don't know where they're going. But I felt totally safe. She felt totally safe. And so we went to the church, the Baptist church, and that church was up on a hill, and it also housed the seminary in Havana that was sponsored by American missionaries. And from that day on, I mean, I was in church as many days as you would have me. I was involved in everything. I loved it. I could have slept on a cot there, you know, all the time if you would let me, because I just fell in love with it. After looking back on it, you know that it was the calling of God drawing me in. I mean, what little kid was sitting in the front pew glued to the preacher instead of being in the back pew doodling and laughing with other kids? I wasn't doing that. It was just fascinating to hear this man preach. And, you know, what would fascinate, you know, a six-year-old or seven-year-old to that extent? And but after Castro took over, we couldn't walk to the church holding our Bibles. Our meetings got fewer and fewer. And I remember the choir director, the missionary there, was Mr. Codel. And he and his wife had been there for years, and his wife was the choir director, the children's choir director. And so I immediately got in the choir. You know, I had to do that. And these two people were so tender and so loving. And they were just so into the Cuban culture. It was like, I mean, you knew that they weren't Cuban just by their appearance. But, oh, they were right there. And found out later that he and his son and my pastor all ended up in jail. Castro imprisoned them. And it's kind of interesting, too, because the deception was so good. It has such a finesse to it. Because Castro, this is what they believed prior to 51, okay, or just at the doorway. You got to remember that Batista's regime was going downhill fast. He was committing atrocities against people that were against him. I mean, when I went back in 1999 to visit my mom's side of the family, I met a first cousin for the very first time ever. And as I sat there at her dinner table, she was telling me of how Batista would gouge out the eyes of students that were against him. And she would be weeping. I remember my mom telling me that one of her early beaux was one of the guys that was against Batista, and he was killed. Who knows? He could have been my dad, you know. So church was being taken from me. The one thing that I lived for, that I wanted to just engulf me all day long, to be with my other little friends and to sing in the choir and to read the Bible and to listen to a preacher. In fact, I said, I'm going to marry a loudmouth preacher, because that guy was, you know, so passionate that that's the kind of guy I want to marry. And it was all being taken away. So, but they were portraying Castro as somebody that was democratic for the middle class, you know, that he was going back to the agrarian reform and political honesty. Oh my God, is that such a farce? Elections and national sovereignty, all these wonderful things that we think about in our utopic idea of what a nation should be. And I was right there. I mean, that's what I lived in, or I thought I was living in, until he took over.
And so these are the basic, like, some of the buzzwords and claims they were making about what kind of changes and innovations were going on, but that was just to pacify the people to believe that they were on their side.
Yeah, because he wanted to contrast himself with Batista, and that's the way he was doing it. You know, and on top of that, the Catholic Church fell right into it. I mean, they were so supportive, because you got to remember, he went to the most prestigious Jesuit Catholic school in the entire island, in the city of Belén, and his compadres were all Catholics. And when he attacked the Moncada Army Base in Santiago, he got captured. That man could have died that day. He could have died that day, but he didn't die. And guess who got him out of jail? The Archbishop of Havana. And nowadays, I could just tell that guy, thanks a lot for nothing. But if there's one thing that I admire about Castro, is this, and only this, is that he had enough chutzpah to attack for what he believed. He was so convinced of his agenda and his trajectory and what he wanted in his life that he was willing to die for it. He could have died that day, July 26th of whatever year that was, 1959, I don't know. But you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that is lacking. I mean, I got to digress here a little bit, because we look at all of these other Middle Eastern countries, okay? People are dying left and right for what they believe in, regardless of whether we agree with that. They are dying. They are being killed. And a terrorist is only in the eyes of the beholder. You see?
Mm-hmm.
And so all of these guys throughout history, because even the American Revolution could have been like the Cuban Revolution, you know, it's a revolution. All those guys believed it in enough to die for it. I don't think the American people are ready for that. I don't think they want to. They're living in this mass denial. So, it's not going to get that bad.
They have no idea of the sacrifices that come along with it.
No. Even though their sons and daughters are facing that sacrifice, but it's not here. It's not on this land. It's somewhere else far away. It doesn't really touch us. See what I mean?
That's a very interesting concept that I totally agree. And of course, you know, what are you going to do when, I mean, here I'm almost 50 years old, and although I've maybe foraged into the, you know, investigating tyrannies, as you may be aware, you know, still haven't lived under it, and it always, I have that same perception, like, well, it happens outside of the borders. It happens in Mexico and Cuba and the Middle East, and, you know, can't happen here. And I find myself even you know, falling into that trap, which I try to avoid. And maybe what we'll do, Carrie, is we got another break coming up. We'll continue after the break and you know, continue where you were talking about the church supporting Castro and the you know, interesting language they used to convince the people that the government was on their side. And we'll just start in right there. So anyway, everyone, you're listening to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. And our guest is Carrie, came from Cuba many years ago, has some very interesting perspectives for us to consider. And we'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on Leaders. Our government leaders swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States before they're allowed to exercise the powers of their offices. This oath automatically requires those office holders to act as a check on usurped or abused power among those within any branch of the government. Why is it, then, that when the Congress assumes for itself powers reserved by the Constitution to the states or the people, the President doesn't object with a defense of the Constitution and refuse to execute unlawful legislation? Or when the President creates Soviet-style czars to violate the public rights, why doesn't the Congress speak up? Or when the court begins striking down the laws of the Union states in violation of the public rights and in favor of international norms, why don't the other two branches bring misdemeanor charges against those offending judges? It appears that our leaders in government think that a non-intervention policy on another branch's behavior is more virtuous than executing the oath they took to support and defend the Constitution. James Madison said in Federalist Paper 51 that if men were angels, no government would be necessary, and that if angels were our governors, no Constitution would be necessary. Our Constitution is necessary, however, and our public officials are proving to us the very reason this is so. The Constitution outlines the restricted powers we, the people, gave to our governors. For our leaders to disobey them is to break the supreme law of the land, which is to be dealt with by impeachment and removal from office. I think the only way to effectively ensure the reinstatement of our American form of law and government is to replace nearly every last congressman with one who will honor his oath.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Where does law come from? If you listen to The Gang in Control, they will tell you that law comes from the ink flowing from the end of the pen in the hand of a lawyer wearing a black robe. But is that where law comes from? This is Pastor David Whitney, Senior Instructor at Institute on the Constitution, and this summer, you have a unique opportunity to learn the answer to that question and many more at Institute on the Constitution Summer Law School. No, you don't have to mortgage the house or win the lottery to attend our summer law school, but you do need a thirst for the truth, and you will need a desire to explore the ideas that you may have never heard before. Ideas that you certainly will never hear in the 200 plus law schools in our land. Why? Because they teach unlaw. I invite you to study the real law. Join us Tuesday evenings at Institute on the Constitution, 7 p.m. starting June 19th. Reserve your place by calling us at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or go to our website, theamericanview.com. That's theamericanview.com.
I pledge allegiance to the Constitution of the American States United and to the Republic which it created, implementing God's governmental plan for man and asking his blessing for its observance, which will provide liberty and justice for all, for all, for all, for all.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Dad, where did the clouds come from?
Well, buddy, that's a good question.
Is this worm a boy or a girl? Why are turrets orange?
Actually,
Dad, why don't you have any air on your head?
How do birds fly?
Why is dirt brown?
Why can't I fly?
Why can't I fly?
Are we there yet?
You may not have all the answers, but if they're comfortable coming to you now when the questions are small, they'll come to you with the bigger questions later.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is Carrie, and she was born and raised in Cuba around the time of the Castro regime or installation into power. And so she's giving us a very unique perspective on what it was like to actually grow up at a time when the government of Cuba changed. She's talked about Batista, who was the leader prior to Castro, and some of his ugly tendencies, and also Castro as well. So what we'd like to break into now is talking about that actual departure time. Carrie has said that there's some interesting stories about family members and how they made their departure, and as well as Carrie's own family. So, Carrie, please continue.
Okay. Well, I said earlier that my dad was in the military, but and he was. He wouldn't be coming home in broad daylight with military fatigues on if he wasn't fighting for Batista. But he was also supporting the guerrilla. He was also supporting Castro because, of course, at the time, it was a very unique situation. People wanted a change, and you've got to understand this. And I'll get to the actual departure, but you have to understand the context of all of that. The United States supported Batista's military coup against, I believe it was Prio Socarrás, who was the president. I could be wrong. But what happened was that Batista was exiled for not being, for treason. He was thrown out of the country and told never come back. But when Prio Socarrás, or whichever the correct president was, took power, took the presidency, he said, well, he's our brother, we'll let him come back. That was the dumbest thing he could have done, because immediately Batista did a coup against him and he took over. So that would have, learn a lesson on that one, okay?
And that was with the United States support, right?
Yes, the United States supported that coup. And I honestly believe that incident and what happened in Cuba was what turned the international perception or the image that the United States wanted to portray throughout the world, that it will no longer support coups. I think that was the turning point, because when they saw what was happening afterwards, they said, oh, brother. And the church was looking to also get United States support for Castro. Why? Because, oh, he's for the poor, he's for this, he's for that. Oh, yes, yes, we got to support him. But anyway, I digress. Going back to leaving, I remember the day that we sat in the Havana airport. My mom would make all of our clothes. She made us a little hat. I still have the little purse that I brought over there, from over there, on that day. Cute little purse. And she dressed my sister and me the same. And we just sat there. It just looked like a very colorless room. All it was is different shades of gray. That's all I remember of sitting there. And we had to sit for hours. And the reason we had to sit there for hours was because they were interrogating my dad. Because, as you may know, well, you might, Joe, because of where you live in California, there are a lot of Hispanics there. But for those of you who don't, Hispanic people have very long names. And you could have like three or four middle names. Well, lo and behold, some of those middle names were flipped around or something from the passport to some other document, birth certificate or whatever, and they were interrogating him and said, "Are you really the one who..." I wasn't there, but you know, but they just kept them, to me, an eternity. And we're just sitting there waiting. And I remember my mom, we had these little jackets, these little coats and stuff, and she sewed into the hem of our clothing our jewelry and things that were precious, so that they wouldn't see them on us. Obviously left all of my dolls and all of my games and all of my everything over there. Oh, another thing I remember when, before we left, in that interim time, I remember my last piece of Chiclet gum, and I couldn't buy any more. So, you know, those long ones. And every day I would take a little tiny piece of it and put the rest of it away and chew that little tiny piece until it was all gone. But it lasted me a little while. But I remember that, saving that last piece of gum. What else? When we got on the plane after they let my dad out and we finally got on the plane, and I was looking down from the window of the plane to my country, and I started to get excited. I said, "Oh, look, Mama!" And they told me, "Shh, you can't talk. You can't say anything." Oh, and I was wondering, well, why can't I say anything? What are they going to do to me just because I'm looking at my island down there? I remember that, and that was kind of weird, too. A lot of secrecy, a lot of stuff that they didn't want us to know. I'm sure Mom knew, but I didn't know, and she wasn't going to tell me. But my mom had a sister, and she came here without her husband, and her husband did actually leave he actually did escape. He was also, if I'm not incorrect on this, he was also fighting for Batista, but when he saw the poop hit the fan, he says, "I am leaving." And he, as far as I know, and he lives in California, in San Francisco, by the way. I gotta call him and ask him about that. But that he escaped with a raft. So his leaving was not anything like ours, because he, and I'm just speculating, and I'll have to confirm it with my family, but we had my grandmother sponsor us. We had an anchor here that would run us through the channels and get us, you know, legitimized and all that kind of stuff, but he didn't. As far as I know, he didn't have anybody here, so he had to go the underground way. And just as a little side note, too, I had other family from my mom's side come in the Mariel boat lift in 1980. And I'm telling you, Joe, this is the honest truth. And I saw the beginning of this movie twice. And the second time I saw it, I'm going, yep, that is my mom's aunt. Her face, they have like newsreel cuts in the beginning of the movie Scarface. Mm-hmm. And they have it, you know, because that movie is about the criminals that came over. And when it first came out, and I saw it in the movie theater, and I saw her face, I had to leave. I mean, I'm still getting chills just thinking about. I couldn't watch the rest of that movie, and I've never seen the rest of that movie. So I've seen it maybe 10 minutes into it, and that was it. But then just a few months ago, a friend of mine here in town had it, and she was watching it, and she just started playing it. And sure enough, I looked at it again and said, yep, that's my mom's aunt. That's my great aunt. And she came, my mom's cousin paid $5,000 a piece for her father, her mother, was it her father? No, for her mother, her brother, his wife, and their little boy. Because they would charter people to go out there and pick up the people in Cuba. And people that don't know what happened is, I wish I could remember the embassy. It was an embassy. It could have been, oh, I forget the embassy. Anyway, people stayed in the embassy there in Havana saying, we want asylum. And Castro said, oh, yeah? That's what you want? Okay, I'm going to let not only all of you guys out, I'm going to let prisoners out too, and all of you have to go. And of course, you know, when they come over here and they get the news that they're prisoners and they have to be in these tents, and that's what Scarface was all about. Over there in downtown Miami and in maybe even Florida City, Homestead, I'm not really sure. They didn't know who was a prisoner and who wasn't, as far as I know. And Mom said that he knew of a young man, and I don't know how she knew about him. Or maybe he was interviewed, and she saw a show of him being interviewed. He said, I came here for liberty, and all I've seen is the jail cells of this country.
Wow.
And let me tell you, a prisoner in Cuba doesn't necessarily mean that he committed a crime. You see? Yeah.
Right, because there's a lot of political prisoners.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So you, literally your aunt, you could see in this footage, you saw a family member in that footage.
My great aunt.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That must have been, I mean, like you were describing your travels, relatively uneventful, but to actually get on a leaky boat and try to make it across to the mainland, I mean, wow.
Well, that's what happened with my uncle. But during the Mariel Boatless, I don't think there were any leaky boats. They were chartering yachts from Miami to go over there and get them. But there were some of them were getting overloaded, and perhaps some of them, I can't remember really to tell you, but they may have been taken on water because they were overloaded. But yeah, you know, and it all brings me even to the 2000, in the year 2000 when Elian Gonzalez came, and his mom came, in a, you know, raft that was about to fall apart. It just breaks my heart to see that this little boy lost his mom in the ocean, and because of some political garbage, they send him right back, and now he's the poster boy of communism.
Right, because he's probably all grown up now.
Oh, yeah. And he said, those Americans brought me back. Okay, so guess what? They didn't like me.
So it looks like one loss in the propaganda war for the U.S. in that case.
Yeah, and that poor woman, you know. They say, oh, what a miracle that the dolphins were surrounding him to keep him away from sharks. And I said, yeah, and that miracle was thwarted by Clinton's administration when his mother died and they put him right back. She died for nothing.
Hmm.
Oh, don't get me started.
Well, we do have a break coming up, so we'll continue with this amazing story, Carrie's amazing story. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. And whenever possible, we like to bring you these stories, people who actually have lived in countries that are at least reputed to be pretty bad places to live, and lots of people can't wait to get out. then they come to a country like this thinking that it's absolutely free and have some rude awakenings, which we're going to talk about when we come back. Thanks for joining us.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade back to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can. Tax the sunrise.
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make to pay for all. Healthcare, climate change, pollution. Throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in the grave. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government. It up well as I make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make. They're power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure? A raise, the government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they make it up well as they make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
And your Uncle Sam can, cause he mixes it well as they make it all taste good.
Makes it all taste good.
And I feel so good, cause the government says I should.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
The entire world watched. They watched each step down the rungs of that small ladder, one after another, and waited with great anticipation for that last step.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
At that moment, humanity saw the impossible become the possible. And today, the sky is not the limit. Achievement. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. WSDQ Dunlap, WEPG South Pittsburgh, The Copperhead, WSDT Saudi Daisy, Chattanooga.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Every now and then I'm so happy to bring you stories from people that have actually lived in countries that, historically have been considered tyrannies and oppressing their people. And, of course, I've unfortunately found that our own country is guilty of that to quite an extent. And, of course, that's another benefit of speaking to people who have lived in oppressive countries and then moved here to the U.S. and being able to describe and compare, which is something that many Americans like me aren't able to do because we've had the blessing of living here our entire lives. And some Americans are still out there thinking we live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. I like to keep striving for that goal, but I've found out in my own experiences with the Internal Revenue Service that that's not the case. However, we have Carrie joining us this week, and she's talking about her experiences emigrating from Cuba into the United States. And we basically reached a point in her story when she's on the plane and seeing the island of Cuba beneath her. And now she's going to talk about what it was like to come to the U.S. and her awakening about just how free we are here in the U.S. So, Carrie, please continue.
Okay. I want to correct a few facts here. I got to tell you, in my second bout with the university system and getting my second bachelor's degree in law and society, I wrote a paper about the revolution, and so I've been looking at some of the things that I would not have known as a child. But the Batista coup was in 1952, so that was like not a full year before I was born. So that's a very interesting thing in itself. And also, it wasn't the Archbishop of Havana that got Castro out. It was the Archbishop of Santiago, where the Moncada army base was. But the and I got to tell you this because I want to start putting things, pieces of the puzzle together and bringing them together to where I'm at today and the things that are happening today. The church, the Catholic Church in 1959 had the Archbishop Cervantes had a pastoral letter entitled New Life. And in his March 6, 1959 edition of La Quincena, he established links between God and Castro and depicted Castro and Camilo Cienfuegos as divine. Does that ring a bell? Does that go ding, ding, ding in your head? Because what did they say early on in Obama's administration? Oh, he's the Messiah. He's the deliverer, right? Camilo Cienfuegos, to me, he was like one of the right-hand men of Castro, along with Che Guevara. And but as a child, looking at that man's smile, he almost looked like a Santa Claus to me, with a dark beard. You know, he was, to me, approachable emotionally. And when he died, I remember crying when he died. And I believe that Castro murdered him because he was more popular because he was so much more approachable. And so Castro felt a little threatened, and so that's the story that they felt that he got him killed.
So, I'm sorry, who did Castro murder?
Camilo Cienfuegos, one of his right-hand men. There were the three of them. It was Castro, it was Che Guevara, and Camilo Cienfuegos. They were the most popular names in the revolution.
I see.
And he was the one that, when I found out that he died, I cried. And I, you know, for no other reason, just that his face was soothing to me, that he was approachable, that he had a kind face, although I knew that the stuff that he did was not kind later on. But at that time, being a little girl, yeah, I cried when he died. But let me tell you some things about what this magazine said about Castro. The magazine used Catholic symbols in connection with the revolution, such as a close-up photograph of Cienfuegos' striking resemblance to Jesus Christ. How do they know what Jesus Christ looked like? But, you know. Okay, that's what they said. There were correlations between Castro and Jesus, like the 12 members of the embryonic rebel army, and the white dove perching itself on his shoulder as he delivered his victory speech in January 8 of 1959. He at that time had not said yet, or he was about to say, that he was a socialist communist. So everybody was so excited of this new deliverer, and he took the country down the tubes. So, you know, and his main thing was everybody the same. Everybody the same. Everybody is going to be poor at the same level. Not just, you know, hierarchy. Everybody's going to be poor.
How does that, what's the Spanish for everybody the same? Lo mismo, something?
Todo el mundo a lo mismo. Todos iguales. Todos iguales. And at the time, he had not said that he was a socialist communist. So when I came over here to a totally different language, culture, away from my family, had to learn English. And by the way, in Cuba, they taught English. In fact, I really liked it. I still have little medals that they will give the students for excelling in different subjects, and I have my English medal. It says, you know, it says Inglés right on there. And then I remember too, when I was much younger, maybe even, you know, 4 or 5. I remember these things. Standing again in the middle of the porch of my house in Havana, and I would look up to the sky and see a plane. And I tell you, Joe, the first thing in my mind says, oh, that's where America is, up on that plane. And I would sing songs and make up my own language and say, oh, I'm singing English. Why would I be saying that? What? I mean, you know what I'm saying? It's like I'm singing in a made-up language and I'm saying it's English. I'm looking up in the sky and looking at a plane that, oh, that's America.
There's some destiny going on there.
You know, lo and behold, here I am, singing in English and in America. Okay, so, wow. But when I came here in 62, it wasn't a very, you know, good reception, you know, because America was going through its own stuff, you know, and you know, we're plopped into this whole new environment. And I'm going to school. Well, first of all, I got to say, came to Miami, lived in Miami in a month, and immediately we went to New York. New York scared the poop out of me. It scared me like nothing ever would scare me, because I would hear stories about what happened in school. And nobody ever beat up anybody in school in Cuba, okay? Not that I saw anybody. You will go to school, you will go home. There were no gangs, there were no beating everybody up. You know, my neighbors were black people, and they were my best friends. And I was playing with them, and I didn't see any difference, you know. I wasn't raised that way. You come here, oh my gosh, you're a foreigner, and you can't talk to me in English? I think I need to beat you up. And so that's what was happening. And so I went to PS5 and PS171 in Queens, New York. And I don't know what I would do to people, but they just looked at me like if I had this little sign on my forehead, you know, beat me up, Scotty, and that's what they would do. And I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. You know, what's happening here? And while in New York is when Kennedy got assassinated in November of 63. And I remember that day like it was yesterday. Because at that time, kids could walk to go home from school without too much trouble. You know, I didn't have problems. You know, I was able to walk to school. Thank God he protected me. And when you walk down the street, in my neighborhood, there were storefronts, and all of them had these TVs facing out and showing you what was going on. And I was like mesmerized, because earlier that day, we were in class doing our homework or whatever, and my teacher was at the door whispering to another teacher that was crying, and there was, and everybody's looking at each other like, what's going on? Why are they doing that? And a few minutes later, they told us we can go home. And I go, wow, okay. And as I was walking home and looking at the storefront TVs, that's all they had on. I get home, I turn on the TV, and I glue myself to the TV, and I couldn't comprehend what was happening. I mean, I couldn't wrap my emotions around it. I was just like dumbfounded that something important happened, and by that time, maybe I was like 9, something like that, and I couldn't figure out why I was having such an attraction to this. And then we go to New Haven, Connecticut, and go through the same thing. Go to school, and they used to call them the monitors. You know, they would wear these bright orange things across their chest, you know, and help people, the students, cross the street. This one starts beating up on me again. What did I do to you? You know, and she starts beating up on me, and I'm telling my sister, come help me, come help me. Instead of helping me, she runs home, you know, and leaves me there. But she told me later she was trying to get mom to help me. But I couldn't figure it out, man, to save my life. I don't know what I was
mean,
doing.
Mean, were these just, you know, so-called white kids that were just felt like beating up people that were immigrants or different than themselves?
Well, after a while, that was the right conclusion, but at the time, I didn't do anything to anybody. I just did my homework and walked home and just leave me alone, you know, but no. You know. So, and the same thing, then when we move, oh, I got to tell you a cute story. There was this little black boy in my class in New Haven, and I didn't understand what he was saying, but he liked me. And somehow I understood that he wanted me to be his girlfriend. And just the thought of girlfriend scared me so much, I ran home. But he was cute. He was a cute little chubby kid. You know, but I never had that. That was my first encounter with somebody saying to me, you know, would you be my girlfriend? And I'm going, no, no, no. Fled. I couldn't run fast enough because that was not where I wanted to be. Not that he was a person of another race. It's just the whole idea of having a boyfriend scared me.
Yeah.
No, but you know, but I just thought it was funny.
Oh,
but then we moved back to Miami.
We do. We have a break coming up, so let's let's start with you moving back to Miami. We'll start right there.
Okay.
Our guest is Carrie, and she's telling us a fascinating story of what it's like to have grown up in Cuba and then come to the United States. And we're progressing towards some descriptions about, you know, Carrie's impressions on what it means to be an American, what she's encountered here in this country, and perhaps some suggestions on how we could do better here. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com. freedomabovefortune.com, and we'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom,
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad,
if it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
Probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
And now for the Institute on the Constitution, here's Michael Anthony Perutka with The American View.
The federal government of these United States operates under the authority granted to it by the various states under the Constitution. The federal government was created by the original 13 states, and it is the servant of the states and of the people of the states. It is not their master. It has no authority but to perform some limited duties delegated to it by the Constitution. But mostly everything the federal government does today violates the limits of that authority. Almost everything demanded or commanded by federal agencies is not lawful and has no validity. Interestingly, our founders foresaw this development. They believed that if the federal government violated its authority, the states themselves would step in to protect their people. James Madison said,
"We can safely rely on state legislatures to erect barriers against the encroachments of national authority."
So the states and their subdivisions are charged with the constitutional duty of keeping the feds where they belong. The fact that federal officials violate the Constitution puts no obligation on local authorities or anyone else to go along with their treachery. All local officials, including mayors, police, sheriffs, and prosecutors, must resist federal authorities when they act lawlessly. They should not attempt to enforce federal pretended legislation. Their duty is to keep their word and interpose on behalf of the people. This is Michael Anthony Perutka for Institute on the Constitution, bringing you the American View.
You've just heard Michael Anthony Perutka's commentary on The American View. The views expressed are not necessarily those of this radio station, and we welcome any comments you may care to offer by emailing us at michael@theamericanview.com. Did you know that IOTC now offers the only course on the U.S. Constitution based on the true American principles of law and government as laid out by our founding fathers? To purchase the U.S. Constitution course, visit theamericanview.com.
Hiccup yesterday at the White House after President Obama's home teleprompter reportedly malfunctioned during a family dinner. Correspondent Jane Carmichael joins us.
President Obama's home teleprompter suddenly went blank. He sort of froze mid-sentence, but after a few seconds of silence, Obama was able to pull up his prepared remarks from memory.
Well, White House Deputy Press Secretary Brenda England addressed this error today.
Look, the President has hundreds of conversations every day, and it simply isn't feasible for him to memorize the text for every single one. The prompter is really just a tool to help the President remember to speak, blink, and breathe.
The prompter just help make sure he doesn't say the wrong thing at any point,
asking Obama to fumble around awkwardly.
The President has increased his reliance on the teleprompter, sending it alone on low-priority diplomatic meetings and photo ops. Well, right after the break, we'll talk to a Philadelphian who knows all the best places to get murdered.
Peeling back the layers every day.
Copperhead 1240, 1190, and 910 AM. Southern Rock, Kickin' Country, and Tennessee Talk.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It doesn't take sight to reach the top. It takes vision. Eric Weinmayer knew the risks. Less than 1,200 people had ever conquered Mount Everest, and more than 175 had died trying. But still he climbed, not seeing the terrifying drops or the fear on other faces. And when he reached the summit, he didn't even see the view. Because Eric Weinmayer is blind. He proved it doesn't take sight to reach the top. It takes vision. Pass it on.
America. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, everyone. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. We are so grateful to have as our guest Carrie, who's explaining and describing her experiences, born and raised in Cuba, and then leaving that country for the United States of America, and all the experiences comprised in that journey. And just before the break, Carrie was about to talk about returning to Miami. She mentioned that she was briefly in Miami when she came from Cuba and then moved to New York and went to Connecticut. And now she's going to describe returning to Miami and those experiences. So, Carrie, you have the floor.
Okay. Well, before I return to Miami, I got to tell you that New York and New Haven winters were an experience. That we had never been in snow. We had never been in temperatures below 50. I don't think it ever went into the 40s in Cuba. I remember my mom hanging out the laundry on these pulleys that connected one building to another, hanging them out in the winter, and then they would freeze, and then she would have to bring them in and like crunch them up to take the ice off and put them over the radiator so that they would dry off. That was an amazing thing. And I got to tell you, for someone who has lived in the tropics where you got beach and coconuts and palm trees and all of that, and then go to New York and New Haven where you got like 5 feet of snow surrounding you, and then when it turns into black, dirty snow, and it looks so horrible, oh my gosh, that was really depressing. My mom did not like that at all.
So Miami was a little closer to the Cuban climate.
Oh, for sure. What do you think all the Cubans are there? That's why they didn't leave. But I do have to tell you that when my mom's sister came, and I don't know how she got, I got to ask mom this, I don't know how she got reunited with her husband here. Would you believe that the government would not let her sister stay in Miami? They made us split up. And of all things, they sent her all the way to San Francisco. Of all wow. places to go, you know, that far away So anyway, that was kind of peculiar. So, okay, I'm back in Miami. I'm going to school. And there's tension now because of the assassination of Kennedy. And they suspected at first that it was some kind of Cuban something or other because of the Cuban Missile Crisis, because of the connection with Russia. And so anybody that was Cuban was easy target to get beat up again. I don't know what to tell you. So it's like all of my elementary life, it was like, would you please get off of me? Thank you. You know, it's like, I didn't do anything to you. So eventually, you know, got into high school, and I'm the kind of person that I could be a professional student. I love learning. I love being in class. I love learning new things, and then I love teaching the stuff that I learn. And so 10 years into, let me see, not even 9 years being in this country, I graduated like fourth in my class in high school, and I loved it. Was part of a drill team that needed to have high GPA or you couldn't be in it. And I was in church as many days as I could be. And I loved it. But as you get to be an adult, that's when laws come into play. Because as a child, you don't have to worry about any laws. You don't have to think about anything. Mom and Dad are taking care of that. But as I'm reading, like in the eighth grade, American history, and in other classes, you know, about the origins of this country, I'm falling in love. I said, oh, I love this country. This is what I want my motherland to be. Oh, because see their origins, and the reason why this country exists is because people from Europe who were being persecuted for religious freedom, you know, expression, came here. And I can relate to those people. And I was being persecuted in my country, and so this country has to be the same way. And on top of that, I come to find, and I read it in my history book, and I'll bet you, if I were a betting woman, there's not going to be one American history book in the nation today being taught that the Cuban people participated in the American Revolution. So there was Cuban blood here already, waiting for me for that. And so that made me even. What's that?
Interesting, I said that the Cuban influence even back then.
Yeah. Cuba has been very, very involved in this country because of the proximity, obviously, and in those things, you know. But also the proximity, which I want to digress a little bit, when Cuba became independent from Spain, guess what? The Americans came back and said, okay, well, that's really nice and dandy, but we're going to have the Platt Amendment. Now, the Platt Amendment basically says that we can get our nose in your business anytime we want. And see, that's a complaint of the entire Southern Hemisphere. You say, would you please get out of my life? And now in a microcosm, that is happening more and more, not only to me as an immigrant, but it's happening to you, Joe, as a native born.
Yes.
More and more and more. And so that, as I grew older, I started to get more disheartened because I'm thinking, where is the ideal? Where is, you know, you have this law and you abide by it and you're supposed to be fair or you're supposed to follow your oath, you know, and all of those things are just platitudes and decoration. You can't even rely on Supreme Court precedents anymore. Because they could just say, oh, no, we don't have to follow that. Or we just, you know, the lower courts would just go, well, we think that this means this instead of that. And that is what was more fundamentally correct than the this. You know, and so you can't rely on anything. And the older I get, in a way it's good, in a way, because God says, don't trust any man, and set your affections on things above, not on things on this earth, because you are dead and your life is hidden with Christ in God. Okay, I can take that. But in the meantime, man, it's really hard. It's really hard to swallow, because now there are some positions and some, you know, stands that we're taking that could end us up in very precarious circumstances. And I want so much to be able to look at a really empowering Supreme Court decision and say, I can believe in what this one says. And then all of a sudden it gets knocked down by a lower court. And then when you try to appeal, they deny certiorari because they got too many cases already. And then you have nowhere to go. And so a bad decision stands.
And that must be very, given your background, to see, imagine you had an expectation that no such thing could occur in a country that was founded on the principles that this country was founded upon. But it's a bitter pill to swallow, isn't it?
It is, because see, from what I understand the American history, the American experiment was the separation of the people from monarchy. From that point back, I don't know of one civilization that did not have a monarch or a king or a pharaoh or a czar that dictated everything you did and controlled everything you did, especially if you didn't have any money. So the American experience was, okay, now the people are the ones that give other people consent to rule over them, but that consent has to be acquired properly, and you can't encroach on it. Well, that's exactly what they're doing. It's exactly what they're doing. And God forbid that you should even mention, you know, the word sovereignty as applied to people, because then you look like a lunatic. And yet when you go to the Treaty of Paris, when you go to the Supreme Court Chisholm, when you go to the constitutions of the states way back, guess who were the sovereigns? We were. And I remember, Joe, I remember, when was the first time that John McCain ran for president? What year was that? Not this past time, the one before that.
2008?
No, before that.
I thought he ran in 2008, but he ran earlier than that?
Yeah, he ran twice. And the first time he ran, I think I was in Tennessee or something, and I pick up this newspaper and I'm reading this article, and I just about fell off my chair. He says, we have to return the sovereignty to the people. And I'm going, oh my gosh, he said that? I found that speech on the internet and I saved it. And I'm thinking, and I wrote to him, so what did you mean to return the sovereignty to the people? Well, of course he didn't answer, because they never answer you. But I thought that was pretty curious. Because that means if it has to be returned, that means that we had it at one time.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So we're not as much of a lunatic as, you know, Nightline people say that we are. because there is some historical documentation about it. Now that people take that and run with it and do stupid things, yeah, they do. But anyway, so here I am in this country, learning the language, learning the life, learning to be an American. I got naturalized in 1976, and I was so proud. I was just beaming. I remember exactly where I was, in Miami, 1976, and I got naturalized. You won't believe it. One of the reasons I got naturalized that year is because I wanted to be in the Miss America contest. And I was in the preliminaries on Miss North Miami, and that was pretty cool. So that was the year that I started running for that cute little thing and got naturalized at the same time. So I started reading some documents that I want to get into in the next segment that led me to where I am today with all of this and with my vision of what America should be, and I don't think it'll ever be again. This return to America, return, you know, take back America garbage, it ain't happening. It's not going to happen.
Well, I think that'll be excellent. So we'll go out to a break. Joe Bannister here, host of the Freedom Above Fortune radio show, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. And our guest is Carrie, and she's telling us about her experiences immigrating from Cuba and coming to the U.S. and what she thinks of the land of the free and the home of the brave from a very unique perspective. We'll be right back after these messages. Thanks for joining us.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on Subversion. Just based on current facts before us, our nation's political leaders in elected office and both major parties have embraced policies and legislation subversive to our American form of law and government. Therefore, I think it profitable to visit the wisdom of our founding fathers regarding this kind of behavior. Samuel Adams, regarding spreading the wealth around and centralized control of the economy, said these ideas are, quote, as visionary and impractical as those which vest all property in the crown. They are arbitrary, despotic, and in our form of government, unconstitutional. Unquote. These charges could be aimed directly at our president and Congress today. Thomas Jefferson wrote of a central government so strong that it borders on monarchy, "These men have no right to office. If a monarchist be in office anywhere, and it be known to the president, the oath he has taken to support the Constitution imperiously requires the instantaneous dismission of such officer, and I hold the president criminal if he permitted such to remain. To appoint a monarchist to conduct the affairs of a republic is like appointing an atheist to the priesthood." Unquote. The situation in America today is socialism for we the people and a political class who think they're monarchs rather than our agents. Congressmen openly insulting citizens exercising their First Amendment rights to redress. Congressmen taxing future generations without their consent. Presidents and judges approving of all this with their silence. These will be our defining years in the eyes of our children and grandchildren, but if we do nothing, we will come to nothing. We need Americans in great numbers to join us.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Along with Samuel Adams, Patrick Henry was most instrumental in establishing the American dream. Henry made the following plea.
The battle, sir, is not for the strong alone. It is to the vigilant, the active, the brave. There is no retreat. But in submission and slavery, our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard upon the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable. And let it come. I repeat, sir, let it come.
Oh, gentlemen may cry, peace, peace, but there is none. The war has already begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north shall bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Is life so dear and peace so sweet to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Give me liberty or give me death.
Patrick Henry, one of the foremost framers of individual and religious freedom, a son of liberty and the American dream.
The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Isn't life an awesome gift? Married couples have the power to co-create an eternal life with God that will last forever. God has also designed us so that we can plan our families effectively, naturally, and without chemicals or barriers. Learn natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study from the Couple to Couple League. Visit ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, my friends. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Today's show, we've had Carrie explaining her very interesting and unique story about coming to America from Cuba and her impressions, of course, growing up in Cuba, coming to the United States, and living in the United States, and we basically progressed into her, what would you say, Carrie, kind of college years, young adulthood, and, you know, she's obviously an avid reader, a good student, and so learned a lot about the history of this country, the United States, and, you know, world history, and able to give us a really good perspective on what is tyranny? What is oppression? Do we have any of that here in this country? So we have this final segment, and I'm going to just let her take the floor once again and comment regarding those issues. Carrie?
Okay. You know, Joe, you've been saying, you know, we're going to hear what is her perception of America, the land of the free, the home of the brave. And, you know, freedom and bravery are really relative. They're not like a standard, not like a ruler. It's all relative, you know. And because when people come from Cuba today, like a cousin of mine just came here in June, one of my many cousins, to her it's freedom, but to me today is not freedom. To her it is, but to me it isn't. Because of where she came from and where I'm at. I've just lived in here, in this country, way too long. And I look at it and I'm saying, there's no way, there's absolutely no way that we could ever take back America. Take back America to what? To what? To the 1940s? To the 1820s? To what? And it's not going to happen because you got to dig up the trolley rails. And nobody wants to do that. And every time I listen to these talk show hosts, oh yes, just vote them out. Exercise your unalienable right to vote and blah, 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 blah. And I said, that's not going to do anything, folks. It hasn't done it yet. And, you know, the problem with normal is it always gets worse, and that's what's happening. So why do you keep telling me the same old stuff? It's not going to happen. What am I advocating? I'm not advocating anything. I'm just telling you that it ain't going to happen. That's all. Because it takes the courage that people are not willing to exert. And I honestly believe, Joe, that this mentality, the church has something to do with it. Because I talk to a lot of Christians and say, and this is just a theological end. By the way, I have a master's in theology, so I can talk a little bit about that. But it's just a theological perspective, you know, that if you, let's say, if you believe in the pre-trib rapture, I always hear people say, oh, I don't have to worry because I won't be here. I don't have to worry because I'm not going to suffer anything. So they live in this cloud that they're not going to suffer anything because they're going to be zapped out of here in a minute. And so it translates to the general perception of the country as a whole. Oh, it can't happen here. Oh, no, no. It won't. Oh, but 9/11 kind of changed that a little bit. But see, 9/11 accomplished what those people wanted to accomplish, is to destroy, you know, the home of the free and what is it? I don't even remember what it was.
Land of the free and home of the brave.
Yeah, that. Land of the free and the home of the brave. Well, you know what? They just totally destroyed it. They did, because they're not going from the top down. They're going from the bottom up. It is just so mind-boggling that I have 10 trails to follow and I can't follow them all at the same time and get, if I had a computer cable to download into your brain, into your listener's brain, everything that I'm thinking at the same time, you know, it would be wonderful, but I can't do it. Oh my gosh. And so as a Cuban woman here, I'm thinking, okay, where on the planet can I go for another foster mom? You know, because this one is just turning evil on me. Just telling me one thing and doing something else. I read the book of Sybil Edmonds. Do you know who Sybil Edmonds is?
Joe? Yes, I do. Yes, she was a whistleblower. She was a linguist, I believe, with the FBI.
Yeah. And did you read her book?
I have not, no.
Oh, well. I tell you, some of the stuff that her mom told her are the very things that my mom is telling me. Well, you know, the Bible says, well, her mom did say this, but it was the same gist, you know. Bible says you got to obey the government because, and I said, Mom, it doesn't say that. Oh, yes, it does. And the fear of the family being separated because you are seeing injustice and you want to do something about it and your family is scared to death that you're going down that road. And at the end of the book, she says one sentence, oh, yeah, by the way, we moved to New Zealand. It's like, you know, one sentence, this fat book, oh, no, by the end, moved to, why? Because they don't have as stringent travel restrictions as here. I haven't left the state of Florida on a plane in years, because I don't want to subject myself to the stuff that goes on at the airport. The nonsense that goes on at the airport. I just refuse to do it. And I got to find my way to San Francisco to see my uncle. But, you know, those types of things. And So the best thing that I can do is just educate people with what I know. But it's a hard road to tell them, listen, guys, been there, done that. It's smelling a lot like it. It's looking a lot like it. Oh, no, it isn't. Oh, yes, it is, because, you know, the main things that are that were attacked in Cuba are the very same things that are being attacked here. And there's six things: the economy, the church, the school, money, the press, and the family. And don't tell me that one of those or none of those are being affected right now by policies that were not even thought of as being supported of human rights way back when this country was created. All of those are being violated. Every single one.
And that's really, you know, hearing that from you should give Americans pause to think about, you know, you've seen it. It's kind of like, you know, when I explain to people having worked for the IRS, and it gives you a different perspective, and you know, I think it's instructive for the listeners that you're, you know, how they say that, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck, and you're basically saying that the same way that our government's treating the American people, you're seeing the same kind of pattern, and that's something that Americans ought to pause and consider.
Right, because now the focus is on, and this is not being detrimental, okay? But as a Christian, I have to look it through different eyes, because, and all Christians, every single Christian that's listening to Joe and me right now, better perk up, okay, because our loyalty is in Jesus Christ, the Son, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Our first allegiance is to Him. And when we do that, He promises to take care of us. But when we don't look at Him, we look to somebody else to provide our needs. Jesus says, the poor you will have with you always. Always. So, communism comes in and says that we teach the scientific origins of this world. Oh, gee, that sounds familiar. That sounds like evolution. Oh, yeah. They focus on science. They look to other men for their provisions. Do you think God's going to be happy with that? No, He's not going to be happy with that. So we're going to have to decide, because judgment's going to come to the house of God first. First. And we better watch as to where our allegiance lies. And we better stand for truth. His truth. And that's going to bring us into conflict. It inevitably is going to bring us into conflict. Because the world doesn't like it. It does not like it.
Very very poignant words and commentary. And hopefully, well, usually in my experience, my listeners are, you know, pretty much already on the same page. But the nice thing is that we archive the show, and you know, people in the future may take a listen. And, you know, hear a perspective that they're not used to hearing. Actually, thanks to Liberty Works Radio Network, where, as I often say, they provide radio programming that people will not hear anywhere else. So we're fortunate to get your perspectives, and maybe at some point we can, you know, have you back on the show and talk a little bit more about what you're seeing, you know, is specifically in terms of, you mentioned those five or six items where you're seeing the same kinds of patterns. And so, you know, it's very grateful that you could help us understand a little more, those of us that, you know, were born and raised here and really haven't seen it occur in other countries.
Well, you're getting your first taste of it, because 9/11 got this country down that road. So you're feeling the first taste of it.
And you're predicting it's going to get a lot worse.
Yeah. Because I haven't seen the trend of it ever getting better.
Well, that's true. That's the unfortunate part, and it does seem to be spreading, as you mentioned, all the way back in the early 1900s, and long before any of us were even born. And yet that progression of communism and socialism, and then finding out, how those systems were funded, how our own government, the United States government, was significant in funding regimes that promoted communism and socialism. And that's what's a hard pill to swallow, a bitter pill to swallow, when you find out your own government is actually supporting the very systems that it's supposed to be guarding against. So
yeah, under this guise, because I mean, it is just joy. It is so blatant to me. Is that okay? Take the IRS that you worked for. They're talking about, oh, Obama is trying to raise the percentage of taxes on the rich, and Mitt Romney is trying to lower percentage of taxes on the middle class, and percentage of taxes, percentage. Where is that in the Constitution about percentage of taxes?
Right. It's completely...
It's not there.
Not there. Well, Carrie, we've come in here to the end of the show, and I wish we had a little more time, but we are so grateful that you'd spend both hours with us and give us a perspective of an immigrant finding what it's like in this country. And we're glad that you came and you stayed and have been able to educate us a little bit more about the wider world, and hope that we all Americans will take your words and put them into action and do our best to resist tyranny and oppression. And thank you very much for coming on the show. It's our pleasure. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host. Visit agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. And we'll see you next time.